It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this 30th day of August 2022. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, multimedia, madcap extravaganza. That is The Horn chat room, the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. All time zones in between and the great globe round. And if you should happen to pop by there right this very instant, you'll be greeted by early arriver Squeaky and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although he is a third stage guild navigator, has chosen not to fold space and become man cave. And Roger in Oregon has just entered the room. I have a feeling we'll have a lovely conversation this evening. Hi, I'm Robin. And it is, in fact, Titanic Tuesday. The day for taking note of instances of massive Titanic, in fact, right-wing intellect. So named after the verbal miscues of fella long gone now, who once had one of the great monotones of all time. Him and Lurch actually made Lurch sound positively effusive. But answering a call from one of his, and this was of course back in the bad old days of terrestrial radio, taking a call from one of his mouth walking, knuckle breathing right-wing freak listeners, who asked him, "Steve, how come you reckon it is that there is seashells down there in the coal mines here in West Virginia? We ain't nowhere near the beach." And Steve responded,
"Well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates."
Yeah. Still no no word on the whereabouts of the Titanic microplane nutmeg grater, but just the same, that's where Titanic Tuesday got its name, and so we take note of Titanic right-wing intellect each and every Tuesday. Full speed ahead into that there iceberg, yeah. But every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. We are desperately trying to close the gap on a breathtaking fundraising deficit here at the end of August, and so we say thanks. Oh, thanks so much to our dear friend Harold, president and CEO of Sochtris, the secret open carry Happy Trails Roundup Society. Thank you, Harold, and thank you to David, off and running in law school now. So consequently, our fundraising goal is at $1,635 between now and tomorrow. And Harold did have a show on me, and that was so huge. Thank you, Harold. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. And so hopefully we'll narrow the deficit some. Thank you so much. You're absolutely right. Sparky pointing out Nitwit Nero is having a meltdown today. Yeah, it might be time for the fellas with the white dinner jacket with the extra long sleeves to maybe visit him, but no, that's probably too much to hope for. Sparky says it's 101 degrees where he is, according to that woman who lives inside his speaker. We will not say her name. It's a positively tolerable 72 degrees here in the fabulous Horn Studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion. And it is that way because of the roar of the air conditioner, which you can, of course, hear in the background. There's Anatole joining the conversation. Welcome in the chat room. I hope you can catch Tara and I later this evening. Molloy program coming along at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, if you're listening live. Mike is off taking Molly to college, and it just, wow. I mean, I can remember hearing Molly give out her early little cries as they broadcast from their home studio back in the early part of this century. Good luck, good luck, good luck, good luck. And all of our hopes go with you, Mom. So anyway, that means that, yes, today, tomorrow, Thursday, Friday, and Monday, Tara and I will be subbing for Molloy and enjoying every moment of it. Suman says, 109 here, just commiserating with Sparky. Yeah, not competing, just commiserating. By the way, how did the match go down, Suman? Any word? Yeah, I know. Same. Tamara says, I can't believe Molly's off to college. Yeah, it's mind-blowing, isn't it? 45 Meltdown, Matt in San Francisco, says, oh boy, I have Naked playing with himself after removing his Depends on my center square of maggot bingo card today. Let it be today. Let it be today. Yeah, I know. God, this is going to get us running hot and true here at the beginning of the program. Ralph's noting, maybe Iwanka and Jared will call the psychiatrist to submit Donnie to a psychiatric evaluation. Man, woman, TV, camera, treason. Did I do it right? I have such a big brain. Very bigly brain. All the best words. But there's a reason that he's losing his cookies today and each and every day. Among other things, it turns out that, the GOP, at least according to Jonathan Carl over at ABC News, he's like so many people, got a book out. And he reports in that book that Nitwit Nero threatened the GOP that he would start his own party. And Ronna Romney McDaniel said, well, if you do that, we won't pay your bills anymore, your legal bills. And it has cost millions upon millions upon millions of dollars for the RNC to continue paying Nitwit Nero's legal bills. And, well, according to Politico today, the RNC has said that they're not going to pay his bills anymore. Any legal fees having to do with Trump's retention of government documents is not being paid by the RNC because, well, you wouldn't want to be paying for defending, what's the word I'm looking for here? A crook. Yeah. In addition to being represented by the general counsel for a parking garage. Oh, God, I still get it. I still get a giggle from that. General counsel for a parking garage. Nitwit Nero's hired another lawyer. This one named Chris Kyes. Chris Kyes used to be the Solicitor General of Florida. And he's going to represent Nitwit Nero in the FBI search case, such as it is. I don't know what kind of a case is there. You know, you might remember another lawyer signed a document saying, oh, no, he's turned over everything he had under penalty of perjury. That's what I'm saying. And then it turned out he hadn't. And apparently, Nitwit Nero is supposed to pay Chris Kyes personally. But, I don't think that's going to happen. Politico, in its story, said a person familiar with the matter confirmed that the Republican National Committee is not paying for Trump's legal fees related to the FBI's investigation and retrieval of documents at Mar-a-Lago. That's a departure of sorts from the past. The RNC has, for example, paid for Trump's legal bills involving New York Attorney General Tish James's investigation into the former president's private businesses. The committee would stop paying Trump's legal fees should he formally declare his candidacy for president in the 2024 election, a step he has hinted at, but is yet to take. Oh, he's in a bit of a conundrum, isn't he? No wonder he's having a bit of a meltdown.
You know, I can't announce for president yet because a lot of campaign finance things would then happen.
And it would really put a kink in his grift. Because, among other things, earlier today, there I was minding my own business at 2:13 this afternoon when I got an urgent email from Save America. And, no, really, from, I got an internet, you know, it's not a series of tubes, it's not a big truck, it's a series of tubes, from Kimberly Gargoyle. You remember her? At the 2020 convention, the virtual convention of the RNC, when she stood behind a podium, and the best is yet to come! Remember that? Friend, are you going to contribute to President Trump's end-of-the-month goal? I wouldn't be reaching out if this goal wasn't absolutely critical. As President Trump leads the fight to save America, it's up to his best supporters like you to ensure our movement has enough fuel in the tank to win back his majority in 2022. Our end-of-the-month deadline is approaching, and we need all hands on deck if we're going to crush our goal. Hitting this goal is so important that President Trump has activated... President Trump. has activated...
Activate the 7X impact on all contributions. Throw the turd switch.
Oh, my God. And so it will continue, you know, the grift will continue.
Darlene in Connecticut says, please, oh, please, Mr. Trump, start your own party and split the Republican vote come November. Wow, all this time Trump was holding the RNC hostage just like he held all of us hostage for 4 years. That's amusing. Yes, isn't it just? More and more, I find myself using that little... Gee, I hope it didn't hurt too little. Yeah. Split them. Carve them up like a Christmas turkey or slice them eight ways like a pie. I don't care, but the thing is, he won't. He won't. He likes the money. He likes getting his bills paid better than he likes actually running for president. For the time being. There was mention made this morning on my filthy morning habit of the story I had yesterday about the court telling Brian Kemp he didn't have to testify until after November 8th. They didn't quite reach the same conclusion I reached. It was something-something, politically appropriate something-something, running for office something-something. Not, well, at least we know there won't be an indictment in Georgia till after the election. Because that was the important part as far as I was concerned. So, you know, his little grift goes on. The fact of the matter is, if he did announce, the RNC couldn't cover his legal fees anymore because he's not the GOP nominee. And then he also couldn't raise money into a super PAC like he's doing. He could just raise money into the presidential campaign, and he can't have nearly as much fun with that money as he can with a super PAC. Yeah. Matt in San Francisco, general counsel for the parking garage. do you have to pay her before returning to your car? Yeah, maybe you get, I don't know, maybe you get a little, Alina Habab bobblehead for your dashboard. General counsel for the parking garage. I mean, I guess parking garages have general counsels, but usually it's, I mean, it's all automated now. You don't even get a little guy in a booth with a nickel squirter. Am I going to Lena has a nickel squirter? Well, no. Let's be clear. Ralph's noting, so is Christina Bob and Alina Haba not his TV lawyers anymore? Oh, no, they're real good at the TV thing. It's the actual lawyering part where they're not so good. Trump threat, Lee in New York says, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me after $1.6 million in legal bills, shame on me. Truth. Donnie over the rainbow, Christopher in Oregon says, can we send the nurses down to Mayor DeLardass to check on Donnie? Nurse Ratchet, Nurse Annie Wiles from Misery, Nurse Joan Villa Dilmy, Nurse Janine Jones, Nurse Elizabeth Wetlaufer. Famous nurses through it. Yeah. Send them all! Send them all! And Steve in New York, who started all this nonsense with the general counsel for the parking garage part. Isn't this odd? The GOP doesn't pay his legal fees. If he declares for the presidency, he can't use the money he raised for his legal fees anymore, not that he'd follow the law anyway, because campaign finance laws. So if the RNC won't pay, that could very well be their way of throwing him down the memory hole. True. And, you know, devoutly to be wished. Weird things... Weird things are happening. Among them, people you would never expect to be on the same side as now you are. People, I mean, you remember? I mean, this, I feel kind of, well, like I need to shower and bleach. But the fact of the matter is, we're on the same side of an issue as, oh dear. Alberto Torture Boy Gonzalez. No, really. Now, you want to shower in bleach, don't you? Remember Alberto Torture Boy Gonzalez? The Torquemada of Guantanamo Bay? Well, for some reason or another, they decided to get him on the blower at CNN today, where Casey Hunt had a little chat with him, and oh, I don't know how to feel about this.
And joining me now is Alberto Gonzalez, the former U.S. Attorney General under President George W. Bush. Sir, thanks so much for being with us. Really.
Yeah. Do you still hear their screams in your sleep, the people you had tortured at Guantanamo Bay, Alberto? I'm just wondering, just asking for a constitution. Yeah, there we are. Steven New York says, Alberto Torquemada, shower with bleach. Hell, I want to gargle with bleach now.
I appreciate your perspective in the wake of a pretty tough speech from the president. I want to play for everyone again, President Biden talking about law enforcement in January 6th, and then I'll get you to respond. Watch.
Republican friends in Congress, don't tell me you support law enforcement if you won't condemn what happened on the 6th. Don't tell me.
What do you make of that? President Biden responding to President Trump and many of his supporters?
You know, I would go a little bit further. I would say, don't tell me you believe in the rule of law. Don't tell me you believe in democracy if you are not willing to condemn what happened on January 6th. So, listen, I think that we have issues on both sides of the aisle, quite frankly. But I certainly agree with the sentiment that, you know, don't tell me that you support the police if you're not willing to condemn what happened on January 6th.
He also talked, President Biden talked at some length about political violence, and he seemed to be responding to Senator Lindsey Graham when he said, if such and such, this is President Biden, if such and such happens, there will be blood in the streets, of course, potentially referring to Lindsey Graham saying over the weekend that there would be riots in the streets in the event that the former president is indicted over the search down at Mar-a-Lago. What was your take on the president's pushback to those comments?
I'm not going to comment so much on the president's pushback. Let me just comment first on Senator Graham's comments, which I thought were terrible, quite frankly. The notion that there should be any kind of violence in response to what may happen in our courts. Again, the procedure is going to go according to the Constitution. Former President Trump, if he is in fact charged and tried, it'll be pursuant to the protections afforded any defendant in our country. And so, you know, whatever the repercussions or outcome of anything that happens with respect to the search of Mar-a-Lago, there shouldn't be violence in response to that. I condemn what Senator Graham said. I think it was inappropriate. I think it was wrong.
Let me just bring back, I think we actually have the sound of Lindsey Graham. We can show it to everyone to remind them what he said, and then I've got another question for you on the other side. Take a look.
I'll say this. If there's a prosecution of Donald Trump for mishandling classified information after the Clinton debacle, which you presided over and did a hell of a good job, there'll be riots in the streets.
So is he essentially okaying political violence there? And to go back to President Biden, I mean, one of the things he kept saying in the speech today is this is fundamentally un-American, that we suddenly have people out there suggesting political violence may be the solution.
Look, I'm not going to say that he was suggesting violence in the street or encouraging violence in the street, but I think that responsible leaders in Washington should be encouraging patience. Let the process play out. And I'd said the same thing earlier, you know, some time ago, that one of the best things that former President Donald Trump can do, in addition to, of course, cooperating with law enforcement in connection with this investigation, is to inform his supporters that the response to what's going on here, even though it may be unpopular, that the response cannot be violence. That's not the way that we should be operating and conducting ourselves here in a democracy.
The reality, of course, though, is not, I mean, the track record that the former president has on this, and we can point to January 6th, is really to, in many ways, encourage the opposite from his supporters. I'm curious what you think, Merrick Garland, the current attorney general. Obviously, you've been in those shoes in the past, but he is in a very unique position as someone who has to make a decision about what to do here about the former president. Do you think he should be considering what Lindsey Graham suggested there, the fact that it might cause incredible political unrest, that the former president might actually encourage his supporters to violence? I mean, can you take us inside what he might be thinking at this point along those lines?
Well, I don't know General Garland. Let me begin by saying that. But I can tell you, based on what I understand, the kind of person that he is that a consideration? Certainly he'll think about that. He'll understand that there could be those kinds of violent repercussions. But at the end of the day, he took an oath to enforce the law. And so if he believes that a crime has been committed, and if he believes that he can prove that crime beyond a reasonable doubt in our courts, then he has an obligation to move forward. And the most that he can do at that point is, of course, prepare, have the federal government prepare for any kind of reaction that may arise as a result of charges, as a result of a trial, as a result of a conviction. But make no mistake about it, he has an obligation as the attorney general to make sure that crimes are prosecuted and, you know, and deal with the repercussions when they occur.
Yeah, actually, I spoke to Liz Cheney about this very topic, and her push on that front was similar to what you were saying, essentially arguing that this needs to be made outside of the context of any political consideration, even if we're talking about the possibility of violence. What do you think is the responsibility of other Republican leaders? I mean, we have seen many of them be very reluctant, if not refuse, to go out and criticize the former president. What are the responsibility of those types of lawmakers as this process moves forward?
I think they have a responsibility to speak to the American people about the importance of patience. Again, let's let the process play out. And whatever the repercussions, violence can never be the answer. And I think that every elected official in this country has an obligation to deliver that message. I'm not suggesting here that President Donald Trump is guilty of anything. Former President Donald Trump is guilty of anything. He's entitled to due process under the law. But certainly, it seems to me that our elected leadership should be informing the American people to be patient, let the process play out, and whatever the outcome, violence cannot be the response.
Who's this guy, and what did he do with the guy who tortured all those people at Guantanamo? You know, Matt in San Francisco says, Alberto Gonzalez? Wow, talk about PTSD triggers. He's a walking bad flashback, and adds... isn't it an end-time prophecy when Alberto Gonzalez and Liz Cheney speak truth about a Republican leader? I'm buying more bucket pudding? Might not be the worst thing you could do. I mean, and I'm not making light of this. But really, with Alberto Torquemada, where was that concern for the rule of law when they were doing all the heinous things that they did at Guantanamo Bay, in so many cases, to people who had absolutely not a damn thing to do with September the 11th, 2001? Does he feel like that he got his get-out-of-jail-free card, and so now he can be all... I don't know. Maybe this just means that I'm a hopeless partisan. I don't think it does. But he's in taking down the breathless maunderings of Miss Lindsey. He's not wrong. I know, a stopped clock is right twice a day. I get it.
and I think maybe it's entirely possible we need this. But then again, maggot world is just going to say, oh, him?
Yeah, well, he's a rhino.
This is a war criminal saying that the maggots are too much for him. A war criminal. A guy who should have been a defendant in The Hague. Has the world gone mad? I don't know what to make of it. But there's all manner of madness going on. The judicial process seems to be finally trying to... Oh, I don't know. I don't want to go after dinner in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone, but it's like it's the judicial system seems like it's got a terribly, terribly upset stomach, and, you know, sometimes the only way to, well, just, you know, vomiting for a while will make your tummy feel better. And it feels like that's happening in some places. I mean, for God's sakes. A judgment, right, yes, Matt, exactly that. If John Yoo weighs in, we are fucked. Then the world will be upside down, and we'll probably be out of our orbit. Oh, God, that's what's going to be next, isn't it? Yeah, we caught up with John Yoo. Oh, dear. You're not wrong, Matt, no. But, There was a lawsuit, and it was filed by three maggots in February 2021. The three maggots are Mark Fincham, who is running for Secretary of State of Arizona Stan, and of course Paul Gosar, the demon dentist of the desert. And a former Republican maggot state legislator from Arizona Stan named Anthony Kern. And the judge in the case, having taken a hard look at the allegations made, well, they said that these three maggots said that a Democratic legislator from Yuma, Arizona, by the name of Charlene Fernandez, had defamed them by pointing out their connections to January 6th and the terrorist attack on the Capitol of the United States, and that she had conspired against them. Now, the background to all this was that Charlene Fernandez and other Democratic lawmakers asked the FBI to investigate Mark Fincham and Kern and the demon dentist of the deserts. Nexus with the terrorist attack on the Capitol. And those three maggots, interestingly, there were 43 other Democrats who signed the letter to the FBI. They sued none of them, those three maggots, suing only Charlene Fernandez. And for the longest time, they couldn't serve her because she was busy with the state legislature when she was immune from being served with a lawsuit. And then the judge... Well, in April of 2022, a judge by the name of Levi Gunderson took a look at the suit and dismissed it, bounced it, said that the defamation claims were absolutely, utterly baseless, and that Representative Fernandez and the other 43 people were protected by the First Amendment. And then yesterday... the judge entered a blistering order. The judge writing,
On April 29th, 2022, this court granted defendant's motion to dismiss pursuant to Rule 12b-6 of the Arizona Rules of Civil Procedure. Again, that's failure to state a claim upon which relief can be granted. Pending now are the following pleadings: defendant's application for an award of reasonable attorney's fees, ouch, plaintiff's response, oral argument requested, filed on June 20th, and defendant's reply, filed on June 30th. Plaintiff's request for oral arguments is denied. And so via this scathing order, the judge, Levi Gunderson of the Superior Court, Judge Pro Tem Commissioner 3 of the Yuma County Superior Court, said that the three maggots now have to write a check to Ms. Fernandez for $75,000 for her attorney's fees and costs, with a finding, and this is important, that the lawsuit was filed primarily for purposes of harassment. That's big. And so the system seems to have worked. The court finds that the lawsuit was brought for an improper purpose, having been filed against a political opponent primarily for purposes of harassment. And in point of fact, Kern was a lot closer to the United States Capitol than he had claimed he was. He was recorded on the Capitol grounds while the terrorist attack was ongoing. Meanwhile, Mark Fincham, who remains the Republican nominee for Secretary of State and could win that race in November, well, he said he never got within 500 yards of the Capitol during the attack. But then there's video footage that shows him walking directly in front of the east steps of the Capitol, even after the maggots had already broken through. Wow. And of course, the demon dentist of the desert was inside the building, and for all we know, may have had a hand in coordinating the attacks themselves. Regarding the legal system vomiting to make its tummy feel better, our dear friend Kim in New York City, hi Kim, hi Robin, said, as Derek Jacobi, as Claudius said in I, Claudius, let all the poisons that lurk in the mud hatch out. So, wait a minute. Yeah, hey Kim, you get a cowbell for an I Claudius reference. Those don't happen just every day, and I dare say this is probably the only radio show in the entire United States of America where there's been an I Claudius reference, so that makes it super special. Thank you, Kim. And by the way, Billable Rick has awarded a cowbell to Matt in San Francisco. That's for, I'm buying more bucket pudding, in response to his statement that end times are here due to Alberto Gonzalez and Liz Cheney suddenly becoming defenders of justice. And Stephen New York points out, Gonzalez, this is not him speaking for himself, this is W speaking through him. Not sure why W won't speak himself, but this is my thought. He's trying to maintain ex-presidential decorum. That or else he accidentally super glued his mouth shut with a paintbrush stuck in it while he was doing another of his famous portraits of the ex-presidential toes in the shower. What, you think that's impossible? I'd take the odds on the paintbrush and the super glue. I mean, wouldn't you? But it does seem to, it does seem, as Kim pointed out, that a lot of poisons lurking in a lot of mud are hatching out. And eventually they, you know, and we're going to see, and I think we already have seen, the affidavit for the search warrant indicates that, you know, there's a, I don't know, there's a little bit of rawhide taking place down there at Marital Art Ass. Rolling, 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 keep them maggots rolling, keep them maggots rolling, lard ass. No singing, damn it. By the way, and thank you. Thank you to Charlene in Rogues Island, an original member of the sorority of Leans and the and a founding member of Queen Tracy's Reverse Oreo Society. We are now down to 1535, and via another anonymous friend, via the U.S. Postal Service, 1235. We are $1,235 away from finishing August okay, and taking a great deal of weight off of my entirely too broad shoulders. And let's take that down a little bit further. Thank you to Kevin and Tracy in Massachusetts. 1135. 11:35. Thank you. Thank you so much. I hate these scary months, but thank you so very much. 11:35. You know, yeah, that would be that's somewhere in the reign of Henry II, isn't it? Oh, I'm so happy, Kim. Kim says, "My first cowbell. Yay! Yay!" I can hear you smiling from here. Matt in San Francisco, W. The best thing he ever did was go away. I agree, Matt. Sometimes, well, people have a talent, and it takes a while to discover it. But sometimes I think about all the things that have happened in the nearly 20 years this program's been on the air. And I remember sitting stuck on a tarmac in Beckley, West Virginia on January the 20th, 2009. And it was one of those turboprop affairs. I think it was another sob story. And we had to wait, perspiring profusely, inside that airplane, while the airspace around the broad general area of Washington, D.C., was cleared of all traffic so that W could fly away home to cut brush in Texas or get moved into that cul-de-sac in the Dallas suburbs. So many things. Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you, Ralph. Ralph says, "Wow, to that anonymous contribution." Yes, that's to have a show on me's in the space of an hour. Thank you, Ralph, for jumping in. Let's see, 11:25. 11:25 now. We're working our way toward the Battle of Hastings. And a challenge goes onto the table for this Titanic Tuesday. Horn Friends Challenge. This is from Billable Rick. "Since I just got paid and don't have a golf challenge because I haven't played for 3 weeks, I'd like to make the following Horn Friends Challenge. I'll kick in $25 with no strings attached, and I'll kick in an additional 10 for each contribution made by a member of the Horn community whom I've personally met. To wit, in order, Tracy, the lady cab driver, Jim from Louisiana Stan, Joe from Cleveland, Steve from Georgia Stan, Chris from Germany, Chris from Oregon, Sparky, Roger from Oregon, Jude, the Earth Mother, and Brother Deacon Asa." Oh, it's hard to believe that I've personally met 10 members of this community. Are we missing any? But that's so cool that members of this community have made a point of taking what was virtual and making it an IRL thing. That's awesome. Thank you, Billable. I don't know if any of those people are listening. I'm pretty sure Jim from Louisiana Stan isn't. He left in the Great Purity Purge of 2016, sadly. And Ralph's kicked in that $10 to get us down to $11.25, and she'll kick in another $10 if somebody else kicks in $10 too, which will get us down to $11.05 if someone wants to do that. Thank you. Thank you, Ralph. Let's see here. Yeah, we're far enough along. I wanted to get some of the Titanic Tuesday stuff out of the way before we got to the really, really good stuff, because it seems like it would have been patently unfair to give Herschel Walker pride of place 2 weeks in a row on a show. But here we are. Yeah, the Republican nominee for Senate in the state of Georgistan, Herschel Walker. Well, they booked him over on that right-wing cesspit Newsmuck. Oh, that's nice of you. Billable Rick says, by the way, since Tracy's already contributed, I'll kick in $10 for her contribution. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. So the Horn Prince Challenge is on the table. Back to Herschel, though, on Newsmuck. You wouldn't really expect something like this of an outfit like Newsmuck, but it was as close to a softball as they could muster. Earlier today, the team there at Newsmuck asked, oh God, what made them think this was going to be a good idea? They asked Herschel about his, oh dear, mental fitness. Mental fitness. Now, did they just know that he was going to give them something that was going to be clickbait and clipped out and spread far and wide across the interweb tubes? In former life, I had occasion to attend no small number of mental fitness examinations as the representative of the petitioner in these cases, the respondent would of course be the person being sought to be examined. Some of these things happened in the afternoon. Some happened literally in the dark and still of the night, because forthwith meant forthwith back then. And generally speaking, we didn't ask, and we counsel for the respondent would seldom put their client on the stand so as to keep the client from self-proving the allegations of the petition. This feels a little bit like that. You don't want, well, then again, I heard a lot of things in those hearings. There was mention in one of the CIA filtering critical information to the respondent through a flashlight. Given his exalted status with the Fairfax County, Virginia Volunteer Fire Department? Don't ask. Never heard anything about bicycles.
Is getting ugly, and there are constant attacks levied against you, questioning your mental fitness, among other things. How does that make you feel when that happens?
Now, how does that make you feel? Because this is about your feelings, Herschel. We need to talk about your feelings. Among other things is doing a lot of heavy lifting in that sentence for the attack blonde there at Newsmuck. Questioning your mental fitness, among other things. The among other things portion of the program being, oh, pointing a gun at his wife's head and threatening to murder her. And, well, never mind. Let's find out what Herschel had to say.
And what is your response?
Well, my response is I've always been very transparent. I've been very transparent, and I would be a champion for mental health because I've helped so many people that have
I need some.
I think a lot of families have a lot of struggles with mental health, and I would be a champion for that. And they can continue to bring all this, what they want to do against me, because if people know what I stand for, Herschel Walker is still standing. My bike is not bent, so anyone can ride my bike like he's seen to have Chuck Schumer and Joe Biden riding this bike because he seemed to be voting for whatever they say. One thing about me, I represent the people of Georgia. That's the reason I got into this race. I had nothing to do with trying to be a politician because I'm not.
I guess he's not. God willing, by, say, sometime late on November 8th or early on November 9th, he definitely won't be anymore. Please, people of Georgia, save us again. You're our only hope. My bike is not bent. What? And, of course, he's going to be a champion for mental health, but being a maggot and a Republican, that means you talk about something, but you only talk about mental health when, say, a bunch of fourth graders get blown away in Uvalde, Texas. That's what he means by being a champion for mental health. Oh, we don't need to ban any guns or anything. We just need more mental health. Tell us about it, Herschel. Lee in New York says we shouldn't call him Walker. Herschel Stumbler, Herschel Tripped Up, Herschel Pratfall, Herschel Bumbler, Herschel I'm fine, Coach. Herschel Rake Stepper. I don't know. I'm just a girl who does the program. Ralph says, "What is Herschel talking about?" I think there's probably a highly paid position as a political pundit for anybody who can answer that question definitively. Fortunately, they cut away from the desk crew there at Newsmuck to a single shot of Herschel. I can only guess that they were reaching under the table for the Jeroboam of rot gut tequila and the swirly straw. Here, you want to sip? This has got to be good. My bike is not bent, so anyone can ride my bike. He seems to have Chuck Schumer and Joe Biden riding his bike. He means Reverend Senator Warnock, because he seems to be voting for whatever they say. Now, I read that, no funny voices, nothing. That's a direct quote. You heard it with your own ears. Herschel Walker is still standing, which apparently means he has not begun riding his bike. Anybody? Somebody? A little help. Your mental fitness has been questioned, among other things. Gee, thanks, sister. Thanks for the sour persimmons. Matt in San Francisco writes, a champion for mental health. So, I have untreated mental illness, so elect me so I can be a champion for mental health and let me tell you about my bike. Matt, quit it. Because Matt says, I don't know about you, but I'm sold. I'm going to say something awful here, and Matt, I'm going to ask you to forgive me. there may be an open question as to who's actually got a little more on the ball right now, Herschel or, bless her heart, the senior senator from your state. And I say that with love in my heart. Oh, Lord. But, no, I get your... I'm going to be an advocate for the mental health. Well, you'll have the... If you were to win, Herschel, you'd have the... Probably some of the best mental health coverage in the, available in the known universe. One wonders, Irish Dave says, did Herschel Flopper pedal his bike all over town? Pedaling, just pedaling and more pedaling. Ron and Raleigh says, subject line, one night in Bangkok, it's going to be the ultimate test. Anticipating the debate between Reverend Warnock and Herschel. Oh, Ron and Raleigh says, it's going to be the ultimate test of cerebral fitness. I get my kicks above the waistline, sunshine. Oh, my God, an I, Claudius reference and a One Night in Bangkok reference in the same program on the same evening. I don't know about anybody else's program, but y'all have brought the A-game. Because this is not happening on any of the multimillionaire shows out there. At all. Matt, Ralph's notes, let me tell you about the Negro. I can't remember who said that. Oh, I do. Oh, that was Clovenhoof Bundy. He was going along talking about his gripes with the Bureau of Land Management and it breaks up. And let me tell you about the Negro. Yeah, they're good for a few seconds, but that's how it goes. You're good, you're good, you're good. No. Is it an electric shock bike? Matt wants to know. I'll be here all week. Tip the wait staff. Thank you. God, is there bamboo and coconuts involved? Irish Dave, will the debaters be seated on stationary bikes? Lord God, this is a gift that keeps on giving. I told you that's why I had to wait in terms of, you know, staging all of this out. Because if I'd tried to go to Nitwit Nero's legal problems or $75,000 attorney's fee award in Arizona or any of that stuff, if I tried to go to any of that after this, are you kidding? Nobody would have been able to focus. I mean, I'd really appreciate some journalism here and some depth. I mean, where'd the bicycle business... Oh, wait. I'm trying to make sense of utter, complete, and absolute madness. And, you know, the textbook kind. It's not really, is there... Is there some sort of, like, cultural meme that I'm missing here? You know, that's not my cheese, or I can has cheeseburger lol. This is not my bike. Yeah. Eileen, really? Eileen says, but when will someone spring for some speech lessons for Herschel, or maybe just remove the mouth guard? It's the remove the mouth guard part that makes it comedy, Eileen. Here's your cowbell, dear. I hope this doesn't come across as... It, And thank you to our buddy John in Central PA who just pointed out a posting from Nitwit Nero on that website that hasn't paid $1 million worth of server hosting bills. Today, the 30th day of August, 2022, Nitwit Nero, with his red check mark, because he's got a blue check mark over at Twitter, so he's got a red one, just like his hats.
Why are people so mean? Why are people so mean?
That's all it was.
Why are people so mean?
You just noticed that there's...
You beat the hell out of him. I'll pay your legal bills.
Right. Yep. Where's the beef? Sure. But it's not where's the bike. I'm just kind of... How do I follow that story? How about we go back to the legal stuff? Tom and Sunny San Rafael, Herschel's bike, I think it's parked next to Louis Gohmert's asparagus. Well played. It's just raining cowbells in here today. Sometimes the program just writes itself. Park next. Subject line, Herschel. Matt says, maybe he could be Trump's 2024 running mate. That would unquestionably be championing the mentally ill. Maybe he could get Trump on a stationary bike, dangle a Big Mac in front of him. I think I'm losing my grip on reality. I know the feeling. But the thing is, we live in a time, Matt, when none of this is actually for sure impossible. Most of these things, you could probably place a $5 bet on it, and a bookie would give you 10, you know, Powerball odds. Okay, that's so Randy Radar says it's a Monk episode reference. This is not my coat. Or maybe it's something from Office Space. I want my stapler back. Yeah, you can bring me back my stapler. I can burn this whole place to the ground. One theory is as good as another. And so, enter, because this is a real story. This is the story of the upcoming trial of Tom Barrack. Tom Barrack, B-A-R-R-A-C-K. And you know what? Oddly enough, it's really... I've read several of these stories, and every time I see his last name, I want to pronounce it Barack. No, this is Tom Barrack. He was, at one point in time, the chief of the inaugural committee, which was one of the great, great grifts of the early 21st century. And he's being tried. It's a criminal trial. He's charged with trying to criminally influence, because he was another one of those. You know, there was Michael Flynn, who was an unregistered agent of the Turkish government. Well, Tom Barrack is charged with trying to criminally influence the Nitwit Nero regime and foreign policy decisions made therein while he was an unregistered foreign agent for the United Arab Emirates. Because their check's clear. And so in the process of trying to come up with a jury pool for that federal trial, 409 prospective jurors have been identified. And Tom Barrack's pettifogger has sought to disqualify right off the bat 70% of the 409 prospective jurors. So that's 288, roughly. 288 out of 409 prospective jurors. And the reason he wants to have them disqualified is because he says that they should dismiss any potential juror from the pool who said or believed Trump is their least favorite person, or even have any strong feelings about 2016 and the Trump administration, or live in New York City. He doesn't want any New York City jurors on the jury, which is going to be held in Brooklyn. That's a 288. That's a lot of jurors. And along the way, you know, voir dire takes place. It's the voir dire is the you could say that it's legal French for see and say. And to the extent that Republicans want to see Hunter Biden's laptop, I think we deserve to see Herschel Walker's see and say. No, stop it. See how hard it's like quicksand. A Herschel Walker story is like quicksand. But during the course of voir dire and querying these potential jurors, they asked one potential juror, and that juror said, "I loathe Trump for embarrassing our country and trying to steal the election." That was what the Barrack legal team told the court. They said that another potential juror said Trump's leadership was self-centered and hatred-filled. Factual statement. Another potential juror said Nitwit Nero lacked personal integrity and had a disregard for democracy. The problem is Nitwit Nero is not, unfortunately, on trial here. And Tom Barrack is on trial for having tried to illegally influence foreign policy decisions about the United Arab Emirates. Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear. It is entirely possible for the U.S. attorney to run this case without even mentioning Nitwit Nero's name. Barrack's lawyer, Randall Jackson, That's how the Pineapple Prince, Flush Limbaugh, always used to say the name Jackson, especially if it had the name Jesse in front of it. Because, of course, that dead dirtbag was a stone-cold racist. No, writing to the court, Randall Jackson said, "It is difficult to imagine a situation that more clearly demonstrates both express and relevant implied bias than jurors who express that President Trump is their least favorite person in the entire world." Are all the lawyers bad now? Are there no good lawyers willing to defend these vipers? Well, that was then and this is now. Because according to the New York Law Journal today, not Randall Jackson, but in fact the lead lawyer in this case, a partner from O'Melveny and Myers, a guy named Daniel Petricelli. He's a lawyer now? Wasn't he a TV detective, Petricelli, at one point? jury selection got underway, and Daniel Petrocelli said, I think I hear my dead mother calling me about the dog that ate my that ate my law degree or something. I got to get out of here, Your Honor. And in the midst of voir dire, no, really, this is a case of the dog ate it. Daniel Petrocelli said, Your Honor, can we approach the bench? And I got to get out of this case. Because Daniel Petrocelli didn't even show up. He sent his law partner, James Bowman, to the pretrial conference. And James Bowman said, everything's fine. No, the problem is with the scheduling, because we're going to have this here trial, and it's not something Daniel Petrocelli wants on his schedule. Now, I can't say for sure, but I like to think that maybe the federal judge, since we're talking about a buddy of Nitwit Nero being charged here, I like to think the federal judge might have whispered down the counsel table and said, the check didn't clear, did it? I know, sir. No, Daniel Petrocelli, even though this... Wait, I gotta get rid of the Bugs Bunny voice. Even though this trial has been scheduled for months, with presumably a straight face, James Bowman looked at the court and said, my partner, Mr. Petrocelli, will not be involved in the trial going forward due to other trial obligations. Other trial obligations. That's fine. He's hung my ass out to dry. Damn it. Oh, we're going to have a talk in an alley one of these nights. It was apparently a crafty little bit of desperate lawyering for Daniel Petrocelli. U.S. District Judge Brian Cogan of the Eastern District of New York looked at Bowman and said, I'm not going to push the clock on this case. It's too important. I want to make sure we do it right rather than fast. So maybe he wants to give Daniel Petrocelli a chance to take care of those other trial scheduling matters there. And then he can come in and he can represent his client.
Oh, God bless America.
You tell me, Billable. Billable Rick asks Tom Barrack, is Barrack's attorney another brilliant graduate of Harvard Law just asking for attorney friends, you know, who graduated from state law schools? Yeah, look him up. Daniel Petrocelli, P-E-T-R-O-C-E-L-L-I, Petrocelli.
Now, please, Your Honor, I just don't. I don't want. Please, Mr. Custer, I don't want to go.
Meanwhile, Tom Barrack said, "What the fuck? I think I'm screwed. I've been wearing orange for a while, and everything was so good when we were running the grift to set up the inauguration and everything, and we had all that money and shit." Daniel Petrocelli was the lawyer who sued O.J. for wrongful death on behalf of the Goldman and Brown families. He got a $27 million judgment against O.J. James Bowman worked in management of the U.S. Attorney's Office in L.A. while I was there. He was a good attorney back then. But then he got involved with some friends of Mr. Nero. And shit went sideways. It's kind of like the pettifogger that Darlene was talking about on the program yesterday. The guy was able to lawyer his way around a murder, but his career fell apart the minute he met Alex Jones. And wound up taking the fifth 25 times. Which the trial judge in Connecticut said was unheard of. Everything they touch dies. Oh, yeah. Two songs I thought of after hearing Herschel's comments, Lady B writes. Oh, the letter that you wrote me, Herschel, made me stop and wonder why. But that's okay because I've got a bike. You can ride it if you like. I'm sorry, now that thanks, Lady B. Now they're stuck in my... Don't you really make me stop and wonder why? Eagles, really? I went immediately to Queen. Bicycle! Bicycle! My bike's not bent. Well, how about that? No, he's not one of those Harvard... Daniel Petrocelli is a 1980 graduate of UCLA. My alma mater. Yikes! I know. See what an interesting day it is? And we're only an hour and 16 minutes into the program. We've made such progress this evening. $10 challenge on the table, courtesy of Ralph's, that would get us down to 11:05. And then there's the Friends of the Horn challenge, courtesy of Billable Rick, which, well, let's see. So 35 of that's already taken care of. So we were at 11. So we would actually, if Ralph's challenge is met, that would actually get us down to 10:60, and we would have already shot right past the Battle of Hastings. No, 10:70. We'd be just slightly after the Battle of Hastings. Matt says his bike may not be bent, but he's pedaling with no chain. What are you gonna do with all the cowbells, Matt? I mean, do you hang them in the guest bedroom or something? Maybe over the mantle. Thank you, Roger. Ralph's challenge is met, and actually now we are down to 1,055 to finish the month of August, and we've got the rest of the program tomorrow. Yeah, exactly. Petrocelli, a Harvard-educated lawyer from Boston, sets up shop in a small Arizona town. Oh, can we call him? Wait, there's Miss Ellie from the Andy Griffith Show. What was she doing in trouble in Arizona? Oh, wait, Billable Rick with a correction. Department of Corrections, I misread the wiki entry for Petrocelli. He got his undergraduate degree in econ from UCLA. And then attended Southwestern School of Law in, I'm guessing that means, well, I don't know, Southwestern School of Law. Do you mean Louisiana or do you mean Los Angeles? Don't confuse me, Billable. And then this, thank you for the reminder, Darlene in Connecticut. One of the last of the Cold Warriors, Mikhail Gorbachev, died today at the age of 91. A man who saw the handwriting on the wall for the Soviet Union and actually oversaw its demise, and who provided a foil for old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan.
And Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
It was going to come down anyway. And it's so funny, the historical revisionism that takes place around Ronnie Reagan. Because the CIA had been telling the White House since the early 70s that the USSR was literally unsustainable, and that their collapse was imminent. And their estimation was correct. But it happened while Ronnie was there. And so naturally, Ronnie took credit for it. Even though half the time he probably didn't even know who he was talking to. Kind of like the end of an era, though, isn't it? Interesting that Vlad Putin more or less left him alone. Yeah, well, you're probably not the only one. Randy Radar says, I wonder if Gorby fell off of a balcony. Or got an upset tummy, you know. A polonium upset. Nah, 91. Probably not. Be curious to see how Pootie's captive media handles it. Wait, I know how he'll handle it. Pootie will claim that the Ukro-Nazis killed him. Sure. That's it. Yeah. I hate being all paranoid like that, but any bets? Maybe RT? Maybe, one of the other mainline Mother Russia outlets controlled by Putin's people?
Yes, was dastardly and cowardly attack by Ukro-Nazis that took out beloved former Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev. How dare they?
Yeah, I know, it sounds nuts, doesn't it? It also sounds entirely plausible. Oh, second addendum to the Horn Friends Challenge. Billable Rick says the $10 also applies to other challenges met by my Horn Friends, i.e. cross challenges. Thank you, Billable. Okay, Southwestern University School of Law of Los Angeles. Of course, says Billable. Well, you said L.A., and there was no dot between the L and after the A, and that means Louisiana. L dot A dot means Los Angeles. Let's not get into one of these little grammatical and syntactical dust-ups, shall we? Yeah. Gorby got the 1990 Peace Prize for ending the Cold War. Let's see, he was dead at 91 and 22. So that means he was 70. Yeah, he was a youngish guy. Probably got to maybe enjoy a little bit of that Nobel Peace Prize money. Parked it in a numbered account in Switzerland, maybe. And just think of it. I love the way your mind works, Jeremy. Just think, Mexico doesn't even have to say, Mr. Trump, tear down this mostly unbuilt wall. After all, it falls over in a stiff wind. Yeah, you get that's worth it. That's worth it. And so this is, by the way, Conversation Radio. If there's anything that you would like to bring to the conversation, you're welcome to. The stress line is open. 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN. Stress line named after Bill, Mr. Stress Miller, remember. And we always do. The last Soviet president. Interfax news agency cited Russia's Central Clinical Hospital as having said, Mikhail Gorbachev passed away tonight after a serious and protracted disease. Yeah, heartbreak is a serious and protracted disease, watching his beloved Russia fall back into authoritarianism. when pro-democracy protests swept across the Soviet bloc nations of communist Eastern Europe in 1989, this from the Reuters report, he refrained from using force, unlike previous Kremlin leaders who had sent tanks to crush uprisings in Hungary in 1956 and Czechoslovakia in 1968. But the protests fueled aspirations for autonomy in the 15 republics of the Soviet Union, which disintegrated over the next 2 years in chaotic fashion. He became Soviet General Secretary of the Communist Party in 1985, and he was only 54 years old. I mean, his Soviet leader eyebrows hadn't even come all the way in at that point. And you know what? They probably learned lessons from Gorbachev. Putin did. Because remember, Putin was just a little shitbird KGB colonel out working, you know, the usual KGB turf, you know, being a criminal. Stealing shit, squirreling money away for his retirement, things like that. And he watched the Soviet Union disintegrate, disappear like tears in rain, and you can bet your ass that he has long since said that none of that freedom shit will ever destroy his gig in Mother Russia, and he has behaved accordingly. With his crackdowns on, you know, anybody who doesn't absolutely toe the Putin line, whether it be journalists or punk rockers or gay people. Interesting paragraph in the Reuters story. Many Russians never forgave Gorbachev for the turbulence that his reforms unleashed, considering the subsequent plunge in their living standards too high a price to pay for democracy. After visiting Gorbachev in the hospital on June the 30th, liberal economist Ruslan Grinberg told the Armed Forces news outlet Zvezda, "He gave us all freedom, but we don't know what to do with it." That's a pretty profound statement, isn't it? We have, here in the United States, what we like to call freedom. And we've got an entire political party dedicated to curtailing it all over the place. The most senior sitting justice of the Supreme Court of the United States openly declared judicial war on some of those freedoms. Some of the most intimate and, dare I say, beautiful freedoms that this country has ever acknowledged. The very right to privacy that people in Putin's Russia damned well don't experience, don't have. How about that? So it has applicability for us after all. And in large part, the long, slow slide into authoritarian oppression begins with the greasy-headed old B-movie actor who stood there and muttered, "Mr. Gorbachev,
Tear down this wall, ketchup is a vegetable.
I'm not wrong. Not in the least.
Is it safe to say that Mikhail Gorbachev was probably a more decent human being than Ronald Wilson Reagan, old 666 himself? I think you could make a cogent argument for that. Was Mikhail Gorbachev a better human being than Donald J. Trump? Is that even debatable? It's a pretty short list of people who aren't better human beings. Or it's a pretty short list of people who are worse human beings than Donald J. Trump. I mean, Don Jr., Rudy Giuliani, Michael Flynn, Roger Stone, Paul Manafort, Jair Bolsonaro, Duterte in the Philippines, Xi Jinping, maybe? Yeah. Bibi Netanyahu? There are not a lot of people on planet Earth who are worse people than Donald Trump, but some are rather easily identified. Marginal trailer queen. How about her? Is she a worse human being than Donald J. Trump? Clanny Oakley. Paul Gosar, the demon dentist of the desert. Matt, it just gates worse. Ron Monkey Up DeClantis. Greg Asbot in Texas. Indicted felon Ken Paxton, Attorney General of Texas. How about Governor Hee-Haw Meemaw in Alabama? Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America? Yeah. Food for thought. What else? Lots else. If I'm just going to sit here and fill a lobster the evening away. Freedom broke out, and the NRA's roulette wheel slowed as it passed through Oakland, California. Dateline was today. About 1:30 yesterday at Madison Park Academy in East Oakland, California, a 12-year-old boy was taken into custody, having just shot and wounded his 13-year-old classmate.
Local police said they were able to quickly detain the alleged shooter while his victim was hospitalized in what is now described as stable condition.
Oakland Mayor Libby Schaaf said she was glad that the child was alive and recovering, but said she was dismayed at the gun violence that continues to badger and torment Oakland and more broadly the United States. Taking to Twitter, Mayor Schaaf said, The increased level of gun violence in our country and our city is heartbreaking and unacceptable. Interesting paragraph insofar as it says, authorities have not said whether the shooting was accidental or intentional. Either way, a 12-year-old brought a gun to school. And it's worth noting. This is just hard to process. Death by firearm is the leading cause of death for children and teens in America. Say that again. Death by firearm is the leading cause of death for children and teens in America. Every town issuing a statement said this is a uniquely American problem. Compared to other high-income countries, American children aged 5 to 14 are 21 times more likely to be killed with guns. The leading cause of death. Not childhood leukemia. Not COVID. Not car wrecks, not four-wheeler wrecks, not motorcycle wrecks. Guns. Guns. And of course, the party that says they're pro-life is as quiet as the tombs into which we put our children when it comes to dealing with that reality. And yeah, according to KTVU, when the shooting took place at Madison Park Academy, other children were present. One child, who will probably have nightmares for a while, said, I was hanging with my friends when I heard a gunshot. I heard my friend screaming. Turns out he was the one who got shot. A 17-year-old said, I was worried that was potentially my last moments in case he decided to go ballistic and go crazy. And apparently there were 6 gun deaths in Oakland in recent days. 3 people were killed in a shooting in the west of the city, 2 by gunshot and the 3rd by a bicyclist who was run over by somebody fleeing the scene. Mercy. Steve in New York pointing out, so the leading cause of death for children is 100% preventable. Yeah! How about that? Is that not chilling? I need to take a quick break. We're past the halfway point of the program. I'll be right back. Pardon the silence of the dead ear. Sorry about that. Sorry about that. Sometimes these things can't be avoided. Ron in Raleigh says, obviously, we need more guns because the more guns we have, the safer we are.
I shot a classmate in Oakland just to watch him die.
That's a terrible thing to do to Johnny Cash. Darlene, we had that, unless it's a different story. Nope, it's Lucas Bowen, age 33. We talked about him a few days ago, getting busted for soliciting a minor, political director of Texas Right to Life. Lee in New York reminds us, young people dying by guns. Suicide is a leading cause of death by gun. I know a college student who survived a suicide attempt because a gun was not available. Yeah. Well, since Darlene reminded us of the good God fear and upstanding Bible believing Christ-centered evangelical fundamentalist Christian, Luke Bowen of Texans for Life, or whatever it is, Texas Right to Life. And since we'd already covered that one, let me see if I can make things better with a different creep. Why, yes, I can, and it's not that far different. Enter Perry Hooper Jr. Perry Hooper Jr. is a member of the Alabama State Republican Party Executive Committee. Yeah. Perry is he's a fine Christian. And his daddy, Perry Hooper Sr., was on the Alabama Supreme Court. And see, being on the Alabama State Executive Republican Executive Committee, it means something. It's not like being on the Democratic State Executive Committee. I mean, you know, probably get on there just by saying you're willing to be there. But no, Perry Hooper Jr., he's got Christian values. And by the way, Perry Hooper Jr. was the a co-chair of the Donald Trump 2016 presidential campaign in Alabama. He's 67. He got run in. Last week, according to Captain Saba Coleman, who is a spokeswoman for the Montgomery Police Department. He's booked into the Montgomery County Detention Facility, and his bond was set at $15,000. The incident happened apparently on the 100 block of Commerce Street, and that there would be your Hampton Inn and Suites in downtown Montgomery. The charge, in case you were wondering, and you weren't because you already know, it's exactly what the maggots are constantly barking and grunting and hooting and screaming about, because everything that they say is either something they've done or they plan to do. Yep, first-degree sexual abuse. Because, of course. Perry Hooper Jr. was in the Alabama House of Representatives from 1984 to 2003. And, well, bless their hearts. Doggone it. The Alabama Republican Committee had to send out a press statement. The Alabama Republican Party strongly condemns all forms of sexual abuse and sexual assault. We are committed to personal rights and public safety. You know, except when, you know, their party is engaged in a terrorist attack on the seat of constitutional governance in the United States of America. Then not so much, not so pro-cop, and not so personal rights and public safety. We will be monitoring this situation closely as it makes its way through the judicial process. Don't ask us any more questions. This is getting a little bit embarrassing. Seems like every time we turn around, it's another one of our good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, gunmetal, homosexual, Republican Christians is going to the hoose gal. Now, I'm just curious. Let's see here. Perry Hooper Jr. And there it is. Court documents shed light on Perry Hooper Jr.'s arrest. You might be interested to know that in the photograph that accompanied the initial story from NBC News, he's apparently wearing a blue Trump 2020 tank top, and he's all tanned, and ain't got too bad a case of bingo arms for 67. And he's standing there like he's, I don't know, leading the faithful in a chorus of "A Mighty Fortress Is Our Donald Trump." And there's an American flag in the background and everything. Turns out Perry Hooper Jr. was leaving a business on Montgomery's Commerce Street around 8 p.m. on August the 16th when he, allegedly grabbed the victim by her breastises and her waist and then kissed on her neck before she could break loose. And by the way, he did finally make that $15,000 bail. Yes. Well, I mean, you know what's coming next, right? This is the part where he checks into a God-fearing facility for God-fearing people who got too God-fearing drunk and went and got all handsy on a woman person. Of course, there will be the obligatory statement of, "I have sinned against you," because I'm sure Perry Hooper Jr. has him some family values. Mm-hmm. 67. Yeah, at the time of his booking, because we got his mugshot now, he was apparently just wearing a kind of a thin striped blue T-shirt. Let me see if I... Yes, his in cop language, his eyes do appear to have a red and glassy appearance. Oh, well, like I said, family values. Oh, and just a reminder, of what's at stake on November 8th. This headline: Republicans preparing to bring forward articles of impeachment against Biden ahead of expected November midterm victories. This is apparently a right-wing website because it says conservatives are expected to take back the majority. No, that would be maggots. That would be Trump supporters. There aren't any actual old school Republicans left anymore, at least not in office. But since we got Perry Hooper Jr. out there getting gropey and maybe feeling some rapiness, let's go to Oklahoma, Stan, shall we? Where we meet Brandon Neal, age 34, of Bixby, Oklahoma. He recently resigned as a teacher at Broken Arrow High School after he got charged with second-degree rape and sexual battery. Authorities allege Neil and the unidentified student began a month-long sexual relationship in December of 2019 after they saw each other at the Body Masters Fitness Gym in Bixby. He entered a not guilty plea and was let out on a $100,000 bond. Takes four paragraphs before we get a pronoun. The teen told police that in December of 2019, Neil allegedly touched her sexually while adjusting her body while she was lying on a table. Adjusting her body. That's what we're calling it now. She told the police that on the day after Christmas 2019, she went to Neil's house there in Bixby, Oklahoma, where they had sexy time. Brandon Neil's wife and daughter were away at the time. I reckon maybe they were visiting family for Christmas or some such. And then finally on January 7th, 2020, the daughter and her mama finally went to the police. And she said that the young woman said that she and Brandon Neil kept in touch over the Snapchat. But the next day she said, no, we didn't have a sexual relationship. And Brandon Neil said, no, we didn't. But he told the police that they could look at his phone. And then Brandon Neil resigned that day. Thing kind of went on and on and on. And eventually, the police did build enough of a case to charge him. She went on to say that she had burned everything on her Snapchat. And she said she came forward because she was afraid of Brandon Neil, having let him out on that $100,000 bond. The court said, now, you don't have any contact with the girl, and you don't get employed by any gym or as a personal trainer. Because remember, it all started on a table at the gym when he was adjusting her. Oh, he was not only a high school teacher, he was a track coach. Well, now. Curiously, there's nothing in there about him being a drag queen or a transsexual or a trans person or a member of the LGBTQQIA+ community. Nope, just a straight guy raping a girl student at Body Masters. I'll be darned, it's almost enough to make you think the Republicans are looking in the wrong places. But I mentioned the magic word, drag queens. And so now, down in Texas, Roanoke, Texas, and we've mentioned this before, there's a fad sweeping the nation. They're called drag brunches. Usually happen on the weekend. Folks pop by a little restaurant or bar or roadhouse or whatever for a little day drinking. Nothing wrong with that. A mimosa, maybe a margarita, whatever, suit your fancy. And then the entertainment for the drag brunch are, curiously enough, drag queens. And so This past Sunday, a Dallas-based investigative reporter decided to go down there and do some videoing. And there were people on one side of the street with their signs barking and grunting about grooming and drag queens and what have you. Potties. And I know I'm not supposed to talk about those. But what was different is that where before, especially in shithole states like Texas, sorry, y'all, if y'all live there, y'all know better than me. These maggots have been harassing drag queens, screaming at them, threatening them. Well, in this case, because it's Texas, the grunting, barking, hooting maggot showed up, and they had their freedom protectors. But for a change, this event that was held at the Anderson Distillery and Grill, folks freedom carrying their AR-15s. Who were pro drag queen showed up. And the Elm Fork John Brown Gun Club organized an armed guard outside the restaurant for the drag queens. Yeah, right up there, right down to their come and take it stuff and whatnot. And the maggots barked and grunted from their side of the street, and the pro drag queen people yelled back. There was a maggot carrying a baseball bat wrapped in razor wire. And meanwhile, the proprietor of the Anderson Distillery and Grill, Jay Anderson, said, "It was never my intention to host an event that would result in controversy, hate, and divisiveness. It's my intention to welcome people from all walks of life. The live entertainment will be similar to a variety show with professional drag artists lip-syncing, dancing, and performing comedy routines. The show will be hosted by my son, Bailey, also known as Trisha Delish, who will ensure the show remains clean. No foul language. No sexual content, no erotic behavior, performers will be fully clothed, music will not contain explicit lyrics." And the drag brunch sold out. And because it's Texas, they had to have an armed presence to keep the maggots from going wild. One of the people who organized the maggot portion of the protest, a nasty piece of work named Kelly Neidert, said, "Well, people who participate in Pride events should just be rounded up." And it's not a joke. No, Randy Radar, it's not a repeat, and you know it's not a repeat. This happens every day, practically every weekend. On and on and on and on, because this is where the Republicans decided that they would fight their battle over a marginalized community. The reporter who covered this, Stephen Monticelli, wrote, "Some may say that it's hypocritical to note the armed counter-protesters at the drag brunch when there are armed anti-fascists. But one group is here with weapons because they're seeking to defend a group that feels threatened, while the other group is here for different reasons." And the cops noted that, there were no arrests. We were there to keep the peace and basically keep these two sides apart. That was Ryan Otero of the Roanoke Police Department. So that's where we are now. These sick maggot freaks can't be bothered to behave like decent human beings. And so now, just to have a brunch that features drag queens, you also have to have AR-15s. Merca! The greatest country in the history of the world on earth now, today, forever, in the universe, under God. Amen. And while we're at it, let's wander over to Nebraska-stan. Grand Island, Nebraska-stan, as a matter of fact. Where they had an award-winning newspaper, an award-winning student newspaper at Northwest High School. Notice the past perfect use of the verb to have. Had. Immediately following the editorial board of the Grand Island Northwest High School newspaper, well, I think it appears they are the Vikings. The name of their newspaper, therefore, is the Saga. Clever. Well, May the 16th, they printed their June edition. The June edition included an article titled Pride and Prejudice, LGBTQIA+, and it was all about the origins of Pride Month and examples, historic examples, of homophobia. There was also an editorial excoriating the Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis's Don't Say Gay Law, which, by the way, has been at least suspended temporarily by a court of competent jurisdiction. And because those two things were there, suddenly this 54-year-old Viking Saga student newspaper, in which students are supposedly learning about the value of free speech, it went away. But you see, the students there running the Viking Saga newspaper had already run afoul of the administration because a month previously, I guess in the May issue, they published a story in which they used students' preferred pronouns and names. And the administration there said, henceforward you can only use names assigned at birth going forward. Right. The school board, which, of course, school boards all over the country have been assaulted over the last couple of years by people who don't have children in the school system, grunting and barking about CRT! Well, the school board made the decision about the pronouns. See, the Saga had a staff writer, Marcus Pinnell, and they forced the paper to change his byline against his wishes to his dead name, which I will not use, even though the news story does. Marcus Pinnell said it was the first time that the school had officially been like, we don't really want you here. You know, that was a big deal for me. Meanwhile, the superintendent of schools there in Grand Island is a brave soul by the name of Jeff Edwards. Jeff Edwards, the superintendent, had the question as to why the student newspaper was shut down, forwarded to him by the principal of Northwest High School, P.J. Smith, also a terribly, terribly brave individual. and bold, brave protector of pronouns, Superintendent Jeff Edwards, said,
I'm not going to answer why we shut down the newspapers. Just it was an administrative decision.
The school board president, one Dan Leiser, curious, said,
most people were upset with the LGBTQ content.
And then Vice President Zach Mader said of the LGBTQ editorials,
if a district taxpayer had read the last issue of the saga, they would have been like, holy cow, what is going on at our school?
Well, why did you call them they there, Zach Mader? Why didn't you use their pronouns assigned at birth? An attorney for the Nebraska chapter of the American Civil Liberties Union, Sarah Ripp, said, sounds like a ham-fisted attempt to censor students and discriminate based on a disagreement with perspectives and articles that were featured in the student newspaper. And you see, this is important stuff because it gets people involved like the Nebraska Press Association, of which, oddly enough, the Viking Saga was a member. And Max Couch is a specialist in media law in Nebraska Stan and Kansas Stan, and said the decision by the administration to eliminate the student newspaper violates students' right to free speech unless the school can show a legitimate educational reason for removing the option to participate in a class that publishes award-winning material. It's hard to imagine what the legitimate reason could be. Homophobia and transphobia are not legitimate reasons, in case anybody was wondering. This is where we are. This is who the right wing is using for their punching bag in the current political climate and the current political cycle. This should be easy. And I self-censored dozens of these stories. Because, I don't know, some people get uncomfortable. And you know what? I think the Republicans know that. I think the maggots know that. They know they have finally picked on a marginalized community that some people who call themselves progressive might kind of ally themselves with. Oh, and this is hilarious. Joanne Rowling, who despises trans people and doesn't think much of the gay ones either. She has a new 1,000-page novel out. Now, this woman is a multimillionaire, a tens of millionaire, maybe a 100 millionaire or more, because she created the Harry Potter series, the beloved Harry Potter series. It was to the millennial generation what the Lord of the Rings was to some of us. She's got a new 1,000-pager out, but for some reason or other, even though she's a multi-bajillionaire, she persists in publishing under a pen name, namely Robert Galbraith. And lo and behold, her new novel is apparently about the detective Robert Galbraith, who investigates an author who is tormented by fans of an adolescent fiction series about magic. No, I wish I was joking. But what's more interesting is the pen name that she uses. Joanna Rowling, who published as J.K., which could theoretically be pronounced Jake. She publishes under this pen name, Robert Galbraith. What's curious about using Robert Galbraith, people far more versed in the history of the torture and torment of the gay community might recall that Robert Galbraith was a real person. He was a psychiatrist. And in the 1970s, he concocted cockamamie theories about gayness and came up with systems of torture. Torture. To torture the gay out of people. I'm not making that up. That is really and for true. And she knows damned well what she's doing. And almost single-handedly, she has made life a living hell for many members of the LGBTQ community on Turf Island, which used to be known as the United Kingdom. And she'll make more money off of this. Lee, serving as the Horn Ad Hoc Research Community Department, her wealth is estimated, Jake Rowling, at $1 billion. And she's been given awards for her hate. I use a lot of stories here from The Guardian. The Guardian in the UK is a hot turf mess. And the BBC gave her an award a few years ago for a lengthy screed in which she equated her own psychological difficulties with what, in particular, trans guys go through. People assumed female at birth. It's amazing. Yeah, okay, thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, also pointing out. Try a billion, sister. Yeah. And uses those billions to make people miserable. So we've got that. Speaking of making people miserable, enter Blake Masters. Doesn't that sound like some sort of bad television character, or maybe a cartoon character, maybe somebody who knew Dr. Quest or something? Yeah, no, I'm not kidding. Ron in Raleigh says, man, oh man, 1,000 pages? That woman could use a good editor. If it takes 1,000 pages to get your point across, you need to think a little bit more and write a little bit less. Well, I mean, there are some books that merit 1,000 pages. One of my favorite pieces of historical fiction by Gary Jennings, published in 1980, called Aztec. Every single page had a place. But no, to write a self-serving screed about a fictionalized account of how butthurt you are about the fact that people have pointed out that you're a horrible human being for attacking the very community that propelled you to your massive amounts of wealth. Yeah, good editor indeed. Robert Galbraith. Thank you. Thank you to our dear sister Jude, answering the Friends of the Horn challenge. Via Billable Rick, thank you. So, Billable, if you're listening, Jude jumped in. Because Jude said, yeah, I was listening to the Horn while driving. Billable Rick's request for $10 to lessen your financial burden, Robin Deere, will be met. Women standing as his son Brian in our intention for an easy transition to living in Seattle. Peace. Oh, we're all hoping for a really, really happy settling in and a happy work life for Brian. No, Blake Masters. Now, this guy is the Arizona Republican Party nominee to challenge Mark Kelly for Senate. And Blake Masters has unburdened himself of what's hurting the economy of the United States of America. He did it, of course, on Twitter, because it's 2022. Lots and lots of people will vote for this freak, Blake Masters. Hey, he's a wealthy guy. Very wealthy guy. Basically bought his nomination by being a maggot. He is endorsed by Nitwit Nero. And somebody pointed out to him an Associated Press story about diversity at the Federal Reserve. In the Associated Press story, it noted that the Federal Reserve leadership structure, quote, has become its most diverse ever. There are more female, black, and gay officials contributing to the central bank's interest rate decisions than at any time in its 109-year history. This, of course, led Blake Masters to show the world his intelligence.
Finally, a compelling explanation for why our economy is doing so well.
Because, see, the Federal Reserve can't possibly do well, you know, with the women folk and the black folk and the gay folk on the Federal Reserve in their leadership structure. They can't help themselves, can they? Any opportunity they have to engage in hate against marginalized communities, the Blake Masters of the world, the maggots of the world, simply have to take. The good news is that 538 says that Mark Kelly has a decent chance to be reelected to a six-year term. And the inflation rate does seem to be going down. It's down to 6.3% from 6.8%. It's falling. And Joe Biden has found his, he's found his found his feet, or he's found his punch, because, you know, Stephen New York has been messaging me and saying, this is amazing. I'm feeling good. It feels so good to feel them fight back, Democrats, for a change, instead of being rocked back on our heels, that we're going after the weirdos. We're going after the freaks. Blake Masters. So, doggone it. I was about to go to the phones. I guess I talked too long. And then, well, of course, we have to go back to Texas, where they had a school board meeting. You know, it used to be the school board meetings were these kind of boring affairs. Not a lot of people showed up. The decisions were fairly mundane. But the maggots figured out that they could wage a really cheap war by just getting the freaks to go to school board meetings and county commission meetings. And we have watched over the course of a year or more as using the twin terrors of critical race theory and who's going to which potty, they have been extremely effective in creating chaos in otherwise somewhat normal communities. And so the Texas State Board of Education had a meeting, and an angry white lady showed up, because of course, to demand, well, to make demands about what a first grader learns. This is hockey puck material, no doubt about it. The woman said her name was Jana. And, well, just as Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson of North Carolina stands said, you know, we don't need our children learning nothing about history nor nothing in the first grade through the fifth grade. Well, the Texas School Board was going through revisions of the social studies curriculum for K-12. This is when, and that's when Jenna got up to speak.
Texas, you refer to our flag, blue bonnets, and mockingbirds as significant symbols to a Texas community. No, these are emblems of identity and instill a sense of pride and connection with our home. What this version of Teeks offers to me looks...
Wait. I thought identity was what they got all upset about. You mean to say that Jenna's little first grader is identifying as a mockingbird? Or a bluebell? Or a flag? Oh, dear. Well, she doesn't have a problem with bluebells and mockingbirds and flags, but oh my goodness gracious. You know who she's got a problem with? Oh, you can probably guess. I mean, if not specifically the name, you can at least guess the complexion.
It's a lot like socialism, like collectivism with no individualism. Let's build and teach first graders to build a foundation with solids and not adult concepts like the importance of collaborating with people of various cultures. How can a kid show respect for other cultures if he doesn't know his own?
Do you hear the and going on? Most of these school board fights are carried out by people who aren't even parents. Don't even have a kid in the school system. Now, maybe Jenna does, I don't know. But you'll notice that Jenna assumes that all students will be him and his.
This revision seems to want to teach a first grader.
Can I pause you for just a second?
Okay. This revision wants to teach a first grader who's still putting notes to the tooth fairy under her pillow about following Gandhi's lead to a peaceful protest. A first grader. CRT is already rampant and baked into our curriculum, and we don't want to be good little global citizens where our border is considered a military zone. I don't know what grade that was added into, but why? It's a border, and it's good. Teach that. This is the land of the free, home of the brave. Be brave. Reject these teaks. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. So we've had testifiers come before you that actually could point to specific teaks, point to specific language in the rule text that they're addressing. I would ask that people that come and testify, if you're going to refer to teaks, be specific about what you're talking about so that we understand that you actually have a legitimate concern, or it's not something you're just hearing and reading and repeating. So you asked about borders, or you mentioned that borders are good. I think that I guess I want to understand what of the history on how borders were created do you know about? What did you learn when you were in school?
I'm not an expert. I don't appreciate your belittling.
She didn't belittle. She asked her, "What did you learn when you were in school about borders?" I'm not an expert.
Well, you probably have trouble with your shoelaces in the morning, maggot woman.
I'm here with a PhD. I didn't come up here as an educator or somebody on one of these work groups. I'm coming up here as a parent. When my kids come home and they say, look what we did today in history class, and they say something like, which one of the Bill of Rights would you give up first? I'm sorry, that's leading the witness. No, I cannot find in the teaks and the 300 pages. And these parents are confused and we don't know. So I'm sorry, I'm up here testifying.
That's
because
understood.
We don't understand.
Understood, but then- I know.
Yeah, we're up here testifying because we don't know shit from Shinola. We are dumber than dirt and all we do is sit around watching the Fox News TV and catching the truth the truth social feed from our God Emperor.
The result.
Well, but this is where I'm asking, and this is a genuine ask. If you're going to be concerned about something and you're going to bring up those concerns, rather than speaking in absolutes, perhaps come and ask us questions about how this was developed or where it can be found, because we can help you with that, and we can help clarify. And I'm not belittling. I'm just telling you, we have testifiers who've come and put a lot of hard work in researching their testimony and coming with us to with solutions and questions when they don't understand something. And you just told our chair that you'd read it somewhere, or you heard it, you don't know. And that is not a belittling. I'm just acknowledging what you have yourself said on the dais. And so my point in asking you the question about borders is there, that is a clear example of why we need the standards the way that they have been written, because this country did not always have borders. This country, we're sitting on stolen land. And so those are things that we have to understand.
Members, and I'm sorry.
So, well, that
your turn
isn't
or my turn? Because, okay.
That isn't something that's in the standards. But what is in the standards is understanding our indigenous roots and understanding how indigenous communities have been impacted. And those sorts of pieces of our history are very important. And so, again, I ask, what do you remember about learning about indigenous histories?
I don't remember very much about indigenous histories, but to go back to the first...
Because she didn't think there was none. I mean, we got here, God wanted us to be here, we killed the Apache, we killed the Comanche, and, well, here we are. Somewhere in these Chiricahua Hills, no white man will ever know where, the Apaches buried Cochise, the greatest of their great chiefs. I learned about that in the Time Life series, The Old West. Actually, I didn't learn about it in the books. I learned about it because I memorized that line on TV commercials that run time after time after time after time when I was little and watching TBS. See how it works? But I give major props to the school board member because... Now, this is video, so... audio from video, so I'll just tell you. The brilliant, intelligent, well-spoken woman who refuted this maggot CRT freak Karen appears to be have as part of her heritage that indigenous history. And did you hear the maggots grunt and groan when she said, we are sitting here on stolen land? I mean, it's true. But let's give the maggot her due.
Long diatribe that you delivered.
Diatribe.
We quit our jobs. We left our careers, and we have gone to school board meeting after school board meeting, and we have spent hours and thousands of them ourselves trying to ask questions, as you suggested, begging for information. Where does this come from? What is the curriculum? Give us transparency. I'm here because the school boards won't answer. I'm here because our representatives on the state board don't answer emails. We need help. It's not going in a good direction. I'm sorry I can't answer your question about what I learned about indigenous communities in the border. I know our border is open right now and thousands are flooding over.
No, it isn't. God damn the stupid. But did you notice the one thing that really pissed her off? Why does a first grader need to know about Gandhi? Well, maybe so they won't grow up to be you, Karen.
Emilio says, I know what grade that was added in, sister. CRT and quantum queer indoctrination. Tunneling theory was introduced in the 5I, negative 5I grade, you know, negative imaginary grade. Don't say deus, you'll just confuse her. Confuse her more, I mean. And when she says we just want answers and we can't get answers, what she means is that nobody with, you know, an IQ above the temperature of a goddamn Slurpee will tell her that she is right, and the stuff that has been puked at her by the maggots is the truth. Oh. And I said, I began this by saying, so we go to Texas. But it's not just Texas. Jesus Christ, they're grunting about the open borders in Kansas and Iowa. They're grunting about open borders in Wyoming. They're grunting about open borders in Alabama, where the, you know, the southern border is the goddamn Gulf of Mexico. And here we are.
Why's my kid got to learn about the Gandhi?
Well, I am happy to say that we are down around, we are now down around, what did I say, 1050? 1050 to go to finish the month fully funded? Fingers crossed. And so this time I want to make sure that I go to the stress line when I should go to the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Robin.
Well, hey, Ken.
Ken.
Yeah, how are you?
I hated to hear you. So I take that back. I like listening to our officer, but it is conversation radio, as you proclaim. So let's make that true.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. First thing on the agenda, J.K. Rowling, biggest effing C-word of humanity. She's surpassed Aaron by leaps and bounds. And, you know, fuck her. Or him, or whatever it is. And I don't want to misgender the person, but you know what? She spends a lot of her time doing that. Or so, again, fuck you. Is that okay?
That's fine. Yeah, and curiously, you might be interested to know, in that 1,000-word screed or whatever, 10,000 for all I know, screed that she got an award from the BBC for. She explained that perhaps when she was young, that she might have actually been a trans guy herself.
Well, I was figuring it was gonna drop on her head, you know, when her mom escorted her out, you know, she fell out right on her head. Dumb.
Well, I mean, there are sad aspects. Ken, there are sad aspects to her life. She says that she is a sexual assault survivor. She apparently had a horrible marriage, and by her own admission, says that her daddy told her on a number of occasions that he wished she had been born a boy.
I don't know. Do I believe her?
Yeah. I mean, my guess is she's got a bunch of seriously unresolved issues. And might be a closeted, self-hating trans man.
Horrible. The scariest movie I ever saw was Sybil. I don't know if you ever saw that, with supposed multiple personalities person, but she was, you know, sexually assaulted with a, Ooh, no, forget that. Let's think of something else. How about Edmund Herschel or head hematoma Herschel? Do you think that might be a good word? Alliteration, at least.
Oh, I'm just going with bent bike Herschel for tonight.
Yeah. Okay. Bent bike. Wow.
But you know, Ken, it occurs to me. Now, granted, okay. It's not prayer meeting Wednesday, so I can't. Yeah, well, let me just get this out of the way. All these mouth breathing, knuckle walking, evangelical freaks. You know, they get all excited. They get all beside themselves anytime they start talking about the end times and the revelation, right?
Right. Yeah.
Well, it says right there that the Antichrist shall have a wound in his head. Now, I'm pretty sure Herschel's got several.
Oh, yeah. They're all on the inside. It's sad. You know, it's pretty sad. And I don't know why are they doing this guy, but yeah, I don't know. He asked for it, I guess. Can't really feel so.
Well, it's a great, you know, it's a great hustle. I mean, you can get in the Senate and not ever have to do a damn thing.
Right. Just put in a pink slip. Well, I object, so nothing gets passed. That's funny. I just was digging through pictures. I found this framed. It isn't a photograph. Where it's pinning, it's Mary holding baby Jesus, you know, white. And the last time we talked, I said something about Mary worshipers. And I found this in the bottom of my closet. I can't believe my mom actually like put this thing on her wall. And my dad, I don't think he cared. I don't know. I don't know what he knew. He's probably an agnostic too.
Well, my personal favorite is that portrait of grown-up Jesus holding the little baby Tyrannosaur in his arms.
Oh, really? You know, my favorite is when I was married. We tried being a Methodist for a little bit, but in the pastor's office there is a picture of white Jesus, you know, laughing hysterically. And that to me is always is special. It's like thinking, you know, it's not the crucified guy. It's the I made people and I love people and how special people can be. And if we can laugh, especially in this community, you know, it's just an amazing thing. That's where God or Jesus or whatever spirituality is. It's an interesting thought. I happen to believe in Gaia more than anything else. Mother Earth.
Well, I mean, I don't talk about, you know, whatever spirituality, whatever spirituality I have, Ken, I really don't talk about because I think the very essence of spirituality is personal, intensely personal.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, isn't that what prayer is? That's what the calming of the mind, there really doesn't have to be a higher power, as you know, Bill W. said. You know, it is what you make of it. I don't know, but community is what that's built on. It's about community. It's about belonging and holding each other accountable, but also, you know, hopefully laughing along the way, because it's almost farcical. The things that happen. Well, the goddess of irony is right up there. Oh my gosh. Every time you hurt yourself, like, well, I earned that. But I hit my elbow a couple nights ago, and it just, you know, stung you. Just like, oh, it hurt like a goddamn son of a bitch. He would just laugh because, yep, I earned it. Thank you, goddess. You're a great goddess. And I learned that from you. I wouldn't have ever thought of that.
Yeah, never, ever tweak her on her pink tomato nose. It's just not. Not good practice.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, Matt in San Francisco responding, talking about Herschel, says, "I blame the people around him. They have to know his plight, and then to just take advantage of his celebrity status and run him for Congress, it's abuse for Christ's sake. They shouldn't be doing it." Same reason you don't take your crazy mother to the car lot to buy you a car when she's having an episode. It's too bad we don't have enough mental health counselors or people who could step up and say, enough, leave the man alone. A lot of truth there. Of course, the problem is now he's got it in his noggin that he thinks he wants to be a senator.
Right.
It's just, no, but it is. I mean, we've had a lot of fun at his expense this evening, but it's sad.
Yeah, a bit. It's still funny. Like, I got a wicked sense of humor, and I don't know. You know what's sad is Dr. Oz. He's sad. He's really pathetic.
And well, you know, if we could get Herschel together with Dr. Oz, Dr. Oz might be able to relieve Herschel of some of his money in exchange for a patent medicine cure for his Herschelness.
So we'll bring in Dr. Phil and we'll have like a trifecta from hell. Well, just stop doing it. What a dope. Oh my God.
You do a really good Dr. Phil.
Oh no! I have to talk like that. No, I have to go deeper. Yeah, I have to modulate it deeper. I think I have to work on that. Talk yourself. What a fucking asshole!
You know, you just need to stop. You just need to stop huffing the paint thinner.
Put down that crack pipe and get my pipe. Oh, wait, that's Bill O'Reilly. Oh, jeez. Good thing he's gone. But we've had so many people to replace them. Wow.
Well, Matt points out Dr. Oz has 11 houses. That right there should be reason enough to vote for the other guy.
I looked at one of them, what a palatial thing. What the hell do you do with something like that? Why would you even want to live in my little house, you know, 1,000 square feet, you know, upstairs and same downstairs? It's ample room.
And you've got all you can
afford to hire a Mexican to clean my house.
Quit that. Now, but you've got 1,000 square feet. You've got enough of a job taking care of it, right?
Right, exactly.
And if you've got 11 houses and you've got a country that is suffering under unprecedented homelessness, how can you in good conscience have 11 houses? You can only live in one at a time.
You gotta have a conscience.
I mean, it reminds me of a line from you've seen the movie Chinatown, right? You know, Jack Nicholson.
Oh yeah.
John Huston.
Quite a long time ago, but yes.
Yeah. Well, there's a moment where Jake confronts the tycoon played by John Huston, and he asks him, you know. And this is that moment.
Why are you doing it? How much better can you eat? What can you buy that you can't already afford?
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah, it's...
can you buy? What can you buy? I can't do the voice.
But it's true.
I can't sing either. Gerald. Yeah, I know. Jack Nicholson is like perfect in that role. But what can you buy? What good is it? And give it away. Jeez. Win the lottery, you won't have to ask for any money ever. But I have won the lottery, which.
Well, you know, and of course, it's
all intents and purposes is not going to happen.
It is a parable of warning. The number of people that, like, you know, win the Powerball and then their life goes to hell.
Oh yeah.
Or they're broke again 2 years later.
I don't think so.
Right. So, you know, it's not. People sit around and think, oh, I'd like, you know, I mean, and see, here, I joke about the Maybach. I joke about the great big Olympic-sized kidney-shaped swimming pool. I joke about the Gulfstream 5.
Nuh-uh, Robin, you're not joking.
You caught me. There really is a Gulfstream 5. You know, I got it. I do. Sure. I have the Gulfstream 5 and the Maybach. You know how I got them? I bought them for cheap at the Rush Limbaugh estate sale. And they're about 6 inches long each. They're scale models of a Gulfstream 5 and a Maybach.
There you go.
And there's a teeny tiny little mechanic wearing a white coat that goes with both.
Yeah.
And the kidney-shaped swimming pool is actually a kidney bean.
Oh, good.
And that's about as much as I can handle.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I guess you had the horn in. How'd that go?
Well, I mean, we had it back in June, the official horn in, but Billable Rick and Jude and Brother Deacon Asa and Billable's son Brian and Jude's nephew Bill, they had a mini horn in Seattle this weekend.
Oh wow, nice. Very nice.
Yeah, it looked like I saw lots of photos and it looked like much fun.
Well, provided that we can keep your program on the air, are you hoping for a second one? First weekend of June?
Well, you know, we're looking at... let's see, let me pull the calendar up here. If we stay with the same kind of time frame as last year, because we know it will not rain, we are looking at June 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and 4th.
I would love to. Hopefully I don't have a stroke or anything like that to keep me away. I mean, that would have been late. If, you know, I could have. I was taking care of my mom, so there's no way I could have, you know, got away for that long for planning on it. But I definitely plan on it now. Believe me, I can't wait to give you a big hug and see the raspberries between your boobs. You're so much taller. I'm sorry. It's so weird because I just have this weird thing. I'm going to hug you, but I'm going to only be so tall compared to you.
I'm hoping to get shorter.
They'll be real boobs.
Stop it. Them's fake boobs. Working on that too. The things y'all pick. The things that y'all bring up. But no, that's why I mostly wear flats. I don't need to be 6'4". I'm already suspiciously large enough as it is.
Yeah, well, you're tall, and then I got the diminutive phobia or anxiety.
There's anxiety?
No, it bugs me a lot. There is anxiety with being a small person.
Well, I mean, how not tall are you?
I am 5'4". Oh, wait, 5'5".
That's not that, no.
Yeah, I'm not puny, and I'm not...
You're not a hobbit.
Fairly built. No, I'm not a hobbit, but I joke only refer myself as one. I got hairy toes.
Oh God! I knew the minute I said hobbit, there would be a hairy toes comment. Oh my God! I can't win. Well,
but
I've got a
great mind.
Yeah, I got to wrap things up, Ken. I hope you have a wonderful evening.
All right. And I hope you do too.
And thanks for keeping it from being a 3-hour filibuster.
Yeah, and hopefully more people can cough it up. I hate to put it that way, but, you know, I did my part, and
yes, you
hopefully
did.
We keep this community
so
together.
So many have.
Well, I pray so. They have. It has been a great night. And I'll let you wrap it up, and I will talk to you soon.
All right. Take care, Ken. Bye now.
Bye.
And, by the way, I had a note from Billable Rick, castigating himself on the further addendum to the Horn Friends Challenge. How could I have forgotten that I also met Scotty and Tamara at the Mini Horn Inn in San Diego at the Outback Steakhouse in 2019, just before Joey and I attended the Cubs-Padres game at Petco Field? Old-timers must be sitting in on me. So I've actually personally met 12 members of the Horn community. By the way, which friends have kicked in some dough today besides... Now, Roger jumped in yesterday with a half a C note, so, and that was a different, and yeah, that was a different Roger today. So, basically, it's what you said, so I guess that's where that stands. Thank you, Billable. And speaking of Jude says, talking about the Karen who showed up at the school board meeting, and she was dealing with, by the way, the intelligent and coherent individual who responded to Jenna was a member of the State Board of Education by the name of Marissa B. Perez Diaz, and you know, Jenna thought she was being belittled when she said, "Well, what did you learn about borders?" My aching back. But Jude says, "I viewed that earlier, Robin, the lacking quality which is so profoundly displayed in our current days, not only as void respect, but basic fundamental logic, one which seeks to gain clear understanding. It is convoluted thinking, and we find ourselves trying to grasp as we can't, but we still walk among them, or they among us, considering here to search out my local school board to see if there may be a place for yours truly. Keeping issues close to home, where actions may have an impact." Who knows, Robin? Who knows indeed, Jude? Who knows indeed? And so that is the Titanic Tuesday for this penultimate day of August 2022. Back tomorrow, prayer meeting Wednesday, and ooh, we've got a rich crop tomorrow. I mean, already. I've held back, but wow, this has got, you know, we got some good stuff. Thank you, each and every one of you. Thank you to all of our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. Y'all were so awesome this evening. Thank you, as you are awesome every evening. We are down, thank you, Emilio. We are now down to 10:45. Thank you so much, and hopefully we'll knock, I don't know how we'll do it, but maybe we'll knock it out tomorrow. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Sparky, in the chat room. Thank you to each and every one of you who shares your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Brand new Fresh Malloy featuring yours truly and Tara Devlin coming your way at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. And of course, the best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, a proud union shop, and still the only reason that there is a bill in the Congress to end mountaintop removal. The AIC campaign, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Campaign, is a campaign of Coal River Mountain Watch. H.R. 2073. It's so easy just to call your member of the House of Representatives and say, hey, co-sponsor this bill, please. And it means the world to Appalachia if you're willing to take those very few moments just to do that simple thing. Please stay safe. Wear your mask in crowded areas. You never know who's viewing what. Wash your hands, don't touch your face, use your hand sanitizer, keep your social distance, get your boosters. And for God's sakes, if somebody comes burbling toward you saying, well, we didn't learn nothing about no borders in our schooling, avoid that maggot like the plague. Because she is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.